Okay, so we're continuing on now on Daf Chav Zayin Amud Aleph, near the beginning of the Amud, picking up on the interpretation of the Mishnah, V'almachru Torah lo ikhu sfarid. So on the downslide of the Mishnah, it said that if you, the first item was if they sold a Sefer Torah, they cannot buy really anything else with it. Everything else is lesser in value. So the question is, Ibayalu, Ma'ulim kor Sefer Torah yashon likach bo chadash. Can you sell a Sefer Torah that's perhaps worn out in order to buy another Sefer Torah, which is of equal Kedusha? Perhaps because you have not gone up in Kedusha at all, it's Asur. Perhaps because there's just no way to go any higher up, it's okay. So Toshma, let's see if we can prove it from our Mishnah. Said if they sell a Torah, they can't buy Chumashim. It sounds like it's only going down that's a problem, but not equal. So the answer is that our Mishnah is just b'diavad. If a Sefer Torah was sold, what can you do with the money? We're talking about Yom Bayala l'chatchila. Our question is, can you l'chatchila sell a Sefer Torah to buy another one? Toshma, golin Sefer Torah mitpachot chumashin, v'chumashin mitpachot nevi'im uktuvim. You can roll a Sefer Torah with a mitpachot of a lower thing of status, of a lot of imtuvim, l'chachot chumashin, v'chumashin mitpachot Sefer Torah, but not with something of a higher status, like the cover of a Sefer Torah. So Tani Miyad Golim Sefer Torah mitpachot chumashin, mitpachot chumashin in pachot Sefer Torah lo. So it sounds like you can't use the cover of a Sefer Torah to roll a Sefer Torah, which sounds like you cannot use something of, so we say, equal sanctity. So Eim HaSeif, lo chumashin pachot Sefer Torah, so ha Torah b'Torah shapir dami. So when it says you cannot use the mitpachot of a Sefer Torah to roll chumashin, sounds like you can use it for a Sefer Torah. Here we have an overlapping inference. Nothing's going to help us. You can put a Sefer Torah on top of a Torah. Torah gabei chumashin. Again, these are all scrolls, by the way. So you can't put something of a lower sanctity. It's a scroll. On top of the scroll of a greater sanctity. So you can't take a cloth of Megillat Esther and put it on top of a Sefer Torah, for instance. But what do we see from there? That you can put a Torah on a Torah. So equal status is okay. Hanacha kamart. That doesn't prove anything. Shani hanacha de lo efshar. There's no way to get around the problem of laying something on top of another that it would always have to be of greater sanctity. Dilotei mahachi michrachecha karchinen. How could you ever roll a Sefer Torah? Okay, yati dapa chavre, you have one page sitting on the next. And if equal status is not ever acceptable, there's just no way to ever have anything rolled or sitting anywhere. Ella kevin lo ef shashari. So hachanami kevin lo ef shashari. So it should be the same thing here. Just like with the rolling of Sefer Torah. Since there's no way to get around the problem of equal sanctity, we allow it. So it should be the same thing. If you sold a Sefer Torah, you may sell a Sefer Torah to buy another Sefer Torah. There's no way around it. Problem is, we have an explicit statement from Shimon Gamliel. It says you cannot sell an old Sefer Torah to buy a new one. So the answer is hata mishum shuta. That's talking about a case where you haven't yet bought the new one, and you don't have it lined up. You're just selling a Sefer Torah to have a build a fund to buy a new one. And there we have shuta, like we saw yesterday with Rav Chista. We're talking about a Sefer Torah that's sitting and waiting to be sold. There's only two things you're allowed to sell, to sell a Sefer Torah for, and that is to get money to be able to get married, or to study. So if it's study of Torah, so it sounds like you're allowed to sell a Torah for another Torah. So we're going to distinguish. Money that you use to study is different than buying a Sefer Torah. The study itself will encourage you to do ma'aseh. The first pasuk on the page, famous pasuk in Yeshayahu, that indicates that God wants people to have children. And so therefore, you sell a Sefer Torah for a divine purpose of having a family. Right? But just to buy a Sefer Torah, another Sefer Torah, you couldn't do it. You can't sell the Sefer Torah even if you don't need it, like it's unusable or you have others. It's an interesting combination. But even if somebody has nothing to eat and he sells a Sefer Torah or he sells his daughter into servitude, he will never see a bracha from that money that he gets as the sale. Good. The next point in the Mishnah, the end of the Mishnah said, V'chein bim motrehen, meaning any leftover funds have the same sanctity. Rava says that's only if they sold and there was leftover money. That money still has the Kedusha. So you sold a Beit Knesset for $1 million. You had $750,000 you used to buy Sefer Torah. The other $250,000 has the same sanctity of a Beit Knesset. But if they collected, let's say they had a fund for Beit Knesset, and they collected $1 million, and it turned out they were able to buy the Beit Knesset for $750,000, the other $250,000 is not Kedusha Beit Knesset. So Abaye challenges. We say, when is this the case? We have to figure out what we're talking about. When is it the case that the money has sanctity? It's only if they didn't make a condition at some point in the process. But if they did, they could use it even for a governor's house. So what's the case? We're talking about a case where they sold it and it was left over. What is it up to make a condition? After all, the sale is the sale. It must be that they collected and they made a condition that any leftover funds will be used for other things. So what do we see? Tama dehitnu. It's only because they actually made a condition. Halo hitnu. If they didn't make such a condition, lo, which means that in a regular case when you collect and there's leftover funds, they do have that kedusha. After all, I donated for a Beit Knesset. I don't have money going for something else. The olam shemachru v'hotiru. No, the case is really the first one where they sold and they left it over. This is what we're talking about. Meaning when the sale was a public sale. As if we didn't have a public sale, then the extra money, of course, has kedusha. But if when they sold it, you had the entire community there, and when they sold it, they said, we are making a condition. The leftover funds can be used for other things, then they can. Good. So one of the rabbis was reviewing Mishnayot in front of Rav Sheshet, who was blind and needed someone to do that. Abaye said to Mishmi Alach Rav Sheshet my duchsusya. He said, this word duchsusya that we just used, do you know what it means? Did you hear from Rav Sheshet? Amar le'achim Rav Sheshet, Parsha Demata, the governor of the town. Abaye Hilka Chaytzum Rabbanan, Shmi Ale Milta V'lo Yada Perusha. So therefore we learned a lesson. Yada Tamil Chacham, who studies, and hears a word, he doesn't know what it means. Yishayle Kameh Deshchiach Kameh Rabbanan. You should ask somebody who's always in the presence of the Rabbanan. He'll certainly have heard it from some great person and know what it means. Good. Now we go back to the issue of collection and leftover. Let's say a large part of the community goes and they go into another city. In the meantime, in their town, there was a fundraiser and they taxed everybody. They have to give the money where they are. So they set it aside where they are, and then they bring it back home to their own town. And they use it to feed the poor of their city. So a brayta that says that, but it distinguishes. But if one guy went to another city, and then they said, this guy has to give money, and he's in another city, he finds out, that money is given to the city where he is presently visiting. Rav Huna gazar tanita. So one time Rav Huna made a tanit. Al gabei Rav Chana bar Chaniloi v'chol b'nei mate. So all the members of the city came there. Ramo alayu tztaka. They put a tax of tztaka on them. V'yahavu. And they gave it. Kibol l'meite, when they were going to go home, Amrle, they said to Rav Huna, not v'lanmar, we need the money back so we can take it back to our hometown and give it there. To give it to feed the poor of our city. He said, when is it that the group that comes to another town gives the tzedakah locally and then they recollect it and take it back and give it to their own town? If in the town they're visiting there is no chaver ir. Chaver ir may mean a talmid chacham in the city, or it may mean some sort of a beit din. Right? And but if there is a chaver ir, it's given in the local city where you're visiting. And Rav Huna said, and certainly because after all, the anim in your town are relying on me for money anyway, so in any case, it's going to get to them. But okay, the next Mishnah, in machrin et shal rabim liyachid. Meshim ordino tomi kushato, the Rameh says, besides the evaluation list, the hierarchical list that we had in the first Mishnah, of Beit Knesset and Teva, etc., he said also a Beit Knesset itself, which was a public Beit Knesset, cannot be then sold for a private Beit Knesset, because that's a diminution of its Kedushah. So Amrulo, what was the response? Im ken aflo miyir gdola lemiyir ktana. So if that's the case, you can't sell a Beit Knesset in a big city and buy a Beit Knesset in a small city. In other words, they're arguing reductio ad absurdum, that if you're going to argue that a Beit Knesset has greater Kedushah, the more people that come there, then where are you going to draw the line? So Shapar Kavod the Rabbanon the Rameyer. So the Gemara says that was a good argument. Rameyer miyir gdola liyir ktana miikara kadisha ashtana miikadisha. The mayor disagrees and says, a large city, a small city, it's all kadosh. Rabbi Yochid leik kadusha. He says that a Beit Knesset shel Yochid doesn't have kadusha. Rabbanon iikol lemechash ki hay gavna iikol lemechash. The Rabbanon say no, it has kadusha. And if you're going to be concerned about the relative kadusha of a large one and a small one, shuburavam hadur melech, then indeed, so it wasn't such a reductio. They're arguing also that a large Beit Knesset may have more greatness to it than a small one because in a big city as opposed to a small city because of Barovam Hardat Melech. Nonetheless, we do not take that into consideration. Good. The next Mishnah, which will be the last Mishnah we do today, the Tanan Gemara, Ein Mochim Ben HaKnesset Ela Al Tanai Shem Yirtzu Yachziru Devarmeir. A mayor says you can never sell a Beit Knesset unless you put a condition on it, and this is going to involve us in a little bit of a discussion about Rebit, unless you put a condition on the sale that if the sellers at any point want to, they can retract the sale and take the Beit Knesset back. That's what Meir. Chacham say you could sell it for a permanent sale. Chutz mi'arba dvarim, you're not allowed to sell it for a merchatz, for a bathhouse, a bursiki, which is a tannery, the tevila, for a mikvah, ulevei tamayim, which is an outhouse. Yehuda says, essentially, you sell it to be used as a chatzer, as a yard. The guy buys it can then do whatever he wants because the kedushah is gone with the sale. Now, this issue of selling it and taking it back raises a problem, and I'll introduce the problem right now. When I, the buyer, buy the shul, and so in the meantime, I'm living in the shul. It's not a shul anymore. I'm living in the shul, and I'm sleeping in the shul, and I'm doing whatever I need to do in the shul. And then a month later, they turn around and say, we need it back. So the deal goes back. In the meantime, what happened? I lived there essentially rent-free, which means that I was given rebate, I was given interest for my loan, because effectively I gave the shul $100 million. I now lived in the shul rent-free for a month. A month later, they want their money back. They give me back the $1 million. I give them back the shul. In the meantime, I got rebate for the loan of a month's free rent. It's good. Rameh Hechid Dariba, how can these people live in it? So, Havila rebate. Re'elchanan Rameh Rishitan Rabbi Yehuda Amarai. He's following Rabbi Yehuda, who says, Tzad Echad Beribit Mutar. Tzad Echad doesn't mean on one side. Tzad Echad means if there is a circumstance that may play out to be rebate, but may not play out to be rebate, then it's mutar. We have to take the following into account. Rebit or usury is only prohibited by the Torah if it is set up ab initio. I'm lending you $5 and I want $6 back. That's rebit tutsa. If, on the other hand, I give you a gift or I sell something to you and we make a condition with the possibility of me taking it back depending on if I have such an interest, and then as a result of that, there may be some rebate. That's called rebate of tzadachad berebate, meaning one possible scenario will be rebate, and that the Torah didn't forbid. So we have machloket whether or not the Rabbanan forbade such a thing. The Tanya, and that's one way of interpreting this machloket. I'm coming after you for $100 that you owe me. So what you do is you don't have $100, so you sell me a field that's worth $100. They take the field in lieu of the debt. But on the condition, and if you find the money, let's say within a week, then I will give you back the field and you'll pay me the money. If you get to continue eating the perot in the meantime, then mutar, no problem, because I'm getting no benefit. I'm just holding the field as collateral. But if I, the buyer, the creditor, gets to eat the food, asur. Why? Because then when I give you back the field, give you back the money, I got all those perot for nothing, and that's ribit. He said that even if I, the creditor, eat the food, it's mutar. So Rabbi Yehuda says that it was such a story with Baitos ben Zunin that did this based on Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah's instruction, and it seemed to be fine. They said, you got the case wrong. In that case, it was the mocher, the debtor, who got to continue eating the perot. So what's the disagreement between Rabbi Yehuda and Chachamim? Sarachad Rivit Gimanah, like I explained. Sarachad Rivit Mutar, Sarachad Rivit Asur. Good, that's one way of interpreting that machloket. Rava Amar, the Kulei Amat Sarachad Rivit Asur. Rava says, no, everybody agrees that if you have a scenario where one of the possible outcomes will end up a Rivit, everybody agrees it's Asur. Midarbana. Vacha Rivit Amanat Lachziri Gimanah. The machloket here is about Rivit that's going to be returned. So the deal in the case of the field with the fruit, evidently is that Rabbi Yehuda says, if I, the creditor, eat the fruit, then when I return the field, I'll pay that back. So there is no rebate. And in the same case with the shul, if the guy lives there, so he will pay rent. Marsa Rabbi Dominat Lachzer Mutar, Marsa Asur. So there's two ways of interpreting the Lachlok and Rabbi Yehuda Chacham about the field, which he then morph onto the dispute about Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim about the rent for the shul. So the Chacham said you could sell it forever. This is a tangential discussion. It says you're allowed to urinate within 4 months of tefillah, meaning if you daven, you're out on the road, you daven. And then, within 4 months of the spot that you daven, you can use it that way. Rav Yosef says, what's Shmuel teaching us? In our Mishnah, Rabbi Yehuda said you could sell a shul, which is a, not just a place of tefillah, it's a permanent place of tefillah. You could sell it, and then anybody could do what they want with it. The buyer could do what he wants with it. Even the Rabbanan disagreed and said you can't sell it to somebody who's going to directly make it into a stables or something disgraceful, because a Beit Knesset has a set Kedushah. But just a guy davening on the road, the four amot around him don't have any set Kedushah, just it's not nice during the couple minutes after tefillah to do something disgraceful there. So lo, they would certainly agree. So Tani Tana Kamei Rav Nachman, Hamitpalel Marchik Arba Amotu Mashtim. A ruling that's related. If somebody's davening, and they finish davening, and they have to use have to urinate, they have to step 4 amot away. Mashtim Marchik Arba Amotu Mitpalel. So let's say somebody was urinating, and then they have to daven. So they have to move. They've washed their hands, obviously, and they move away 4 steps, and then they daven. Amrala Bishlama Mashtim Marchik Arba Amotu Mitpalel. I understand why the guy that's urinating has to move away. That because we have a Mishnah in Brachot that says you have to move away from urine. It's not urine, it's disgraceful. You have to move away 4 steps. But why does the guy who's davening have to move 4 steps away? So you're saying because the place where you daven has sanctity, that every road in Nahardea has sanctity, every spot that you go, because people stop at the road and daven. Tani Ishe. So don't read it. You have to step away. It just means stay and don't start davening until you've waited 4 amot worth of walking, like a couple seconds. I understand why a guy who's urinating should wait a few seconds before davening. Should be tzotzot. He has drips. But why, if a guy's davening, why should he stop and wait a few seconds before he urinates? Because for 4 amot worth of time, his lips are still moving, which means that he's still saying tefillah. So you got to wait until that ends. A person, when they finish davening, evidently they still kind of got the echoes of tefillah, if you will, coming off their lips. Good. The last piece that we have today is something that is agadic, And that is the following. Shalut HaMinavit Rabbi Zakai, V'me Arachte Ami. What is the secret to your long life? Amar Lahem, Miyamaylo Ishtati Mayim Betoch 400 Shal Tefillah. This is the connection. I never urinated within 400 of Tefillah. V'lo Kiniti Shem L'Chaverai. I never gave my friends an unpleasant nickname, a shorty, whatever. V'lo Bitalti Kiddush Hayom. And I never ignored or avoided doing Kiddush of the day of Shabbat. Ima Zakenai Tali. I had a grandmother. She sold her own hat in order to be able to get wine for Kiddush Hayom, because she knew how important it was to me. When she died, she left him 300 barrels of wine as a Yerusha. And when he died, he left to his children 3,000 barrels of wine. So clearly, he not only lived a long life, but he had a great bracha, dafka, in the wine because of his constancy with the mitzvah of Kiddush. Funahave also Rita Vakai Kame Durav. So Ravuna, this is something Ravuna used to do. Ravuna was a Talmud of Rav. And he would tie on some straw around himself and stand in front of Rav. Amarle Mai Hai, so Rav said, what's this? Well, Kiddusha, I didn't have wine for Kiddush. Umashkanta Namyane, so I pawned off my belt. I used the money to buy Kiddush. You should be buried in silk. When his son Rabba Bar Ravuna was married, he was a short man. He was lying on a bed. They took all of his daughters and his daughters-in-law, came through all their clothes on him, until he was covered in silk and beautiful fabrics. You see, Rav's bracha came true. Shama Rav the Ikpad. Rav heard about this. He was upset. My time, Alo Martli, Kibarachticha, V'chein Lamar. So when I blessed you, why didn't you say V'chein Lamar that you should get the same thing? Rav only said this when he heard that it happened. Good. Shalom Rav Rav Lazim and Shavua. We have another story. They asked Rav Lazim and Shavua, B'mel Rachte Yamim. Malami Amailo Asiti Kapandari Levin HaKnesset. I never used the shul as a shortcut. V'lo Pasati O Ashe Am Kadosh. I never stepped on the heads of meaning. The Talmidim were lying there. I never walked over them. I always made a bracha first. So Rabbi prayed of Erachta. What was the secret to your long life? I was always first in the Beit Midrash. I never benched in front of a Kohen. We never eat from an animal that the matanot were not taken off and given to the Kohen. At least to be given to the Kohen. That's a re-teaching of Rabbi Yochanan, and I followed it. Rabbi Yitzchak called Ochel Mimashlo Ramuma Notea Ki'ilu Ochel Tvalim. It's almost like eating tevel, like eating fruit that hasn't had masrot separated. V'leito Chatakavate. We don't paskin like that. But this was a supererogatory behavior on his part. V'leibarachta the V'nei Kohen. I never said the bracha before a Kohen. Here the Valyute, is that good? Rabbi Yochanan called Tamin Chacham Shavarech Lefanav Filu Kohen Gadol Amaretz. If you have a Tamin Chacham and somebody else benches in front of him in his place, even if it's a Kohen Gadol, but who's not a Tamin Chacham, that Tamin Chacham deserves to die for letting the Kovet HaTorah be trampled by someone else. All those who hate me love death. Not those who hate me, but those who make others hate me. So the answer is, he says, he's only talking about where he and the Kohen were equal, he always let the Kohen go first. Good. What's the secret to your long life? I never took honor at the falling of my friends. In other words, my friends' misfortune, I never used that for my own honor. I never let my friends curse to go with me to bed because I forgave them. I was easygoing with my money. What does that mean? He was carrying a hoe on his shoulders. Story with Ravuna. He took it from him. If you're used to carrying around tools in your own town, fine. If not, I'm getting honor in your own dishonor. I don't like that. So that's the kabed b'kalon chaverai, meaning I will never let somebody else disgrace themselves just to help me out. What's that? He would, every night when he would go to bed, he would say, Sharele lechoman detzarat. I forgive anybody who hurt me. We have a formula like that. Hareini mochel. And it's in many of the nuskhot of Kriyat Shema. I was easygoing with the money. Iyov was easygoing with his money. He used to leave the storekeeper a pruta of his own money, what we call today a tip. So he asked Rabbi Nechunya, what was your secret of your long life? So what happened when he asked him this is... So atu gavza mochule means that the servants of Rabbi Nechunya came and started striking Rabbi Akiva. They said, "What are you asking silly questions?" Salik yatim aresha dikla. Rabbi Akiva ran up a tree to get away from them. Rabbi Rebim nemar kevas lama nemar chad. So he decided he would show that he was really a Talmid Chacham, and he asked a serious question, which is the Torah says, and you see it on pasuk number. 4 on the page, etakeves echad. So it says, if it says keves, why does it say echad? Because keves is singular. Why does it say keves echad? The answer is contextually makes a lot of sense. So Amarlo Tzimra Abonenhu. So the Rabbi Nechunya said, "Oh, this guy's Talmid Chacham. Leave him alone. Shavku." Amarlo, and then he answered, "Echad miuchad shebedro." Means it has to be the finest one of the flock. Good. Amarlo, and then he answered the question, "How do I evolve a long life?" The Amarlo kibalti matanot. I never accepted gifts. I never stood on my own rights. I was easy going with my money. What does that mean? Rabbi Lazar, if they would send from the Beit HaNasi, they would send him gifts, he wouldn't take them. When they would invite him, he wouldn't go. Don't you want me to live? He who hates gifts will live. So he says, you don't want to live, you're sending me gifts. When they would send him something from the Beit HaNasi, so they wouldn't accept gifts, but he would accept the invitation. Actually, they are being honored by my presence. I didn't stand on my own rights. Somebody who is easygoing with his own midot, we saw this in Rosh Hashanah, then they forgive him from heaven. Whose sins are forgiven? Somebody who himself forgives others. Sha'al Rabbi Rabbi Shimon Korcha. Amar lo katzta v'chayai. What, you want? That's it? You're finished with your life? Rabbi Torah hi yomon ani tzarich. I'm asking you a serious question. It's Torah. Amar lo mi'amai lo nistakalti v'dmut adam rasha. You refuse to ever look at the face of somebody who is a rasha. Rabbi Yochanan asur l'adam nistakel, but selam d'mut adam rasha. Sh'temar lo le'pnei Yoshafat melech Yudan, nyosei m'abit elecha v'mereka. Elisha says that if it were not for the fact that you're here with Yehoshaphat, I wouldn't look at you. He says to Ravam, I believe. Lazar mar einav kehot. You take a look at a rasha, your eyes go dark. Shemar ve'hik is akeng Yitzchak matichena einav mirot. Yitzchak went blind. Why? Yishuv yistakel be'esav rasha, because he looked at Esav, his own son. V'hagar mal, is that what caused it? Rami Yitzchak li'ola alti kilat adyot kala b'necha. We had this earlier. You should never disregard the curse of a simple person. Avimelech kilal tzaron kayim bezara. Avimelech cursed Sarah, and it happened to her children. Right? But Avimelech gave Sarah gifts after she was saved from his house. He said, this is an eye cover for you. And what happened? Her son, her grandson Esav, ended up being blind. Her son, grandson Esav, ended up going blind. And I'm sorry, her son Yitzchak ended up going blind early in his life. Good. So, the answer is that it was both the result of Yitzchak looking at Esav and also the curse of Avimelech. That's what caused his blindness. Rama bar Meachas, ein pnei rasha lo tov. It's not good to look at a rasha. It's not really what it means. It means to favor rasha. Shapti rato amarlo, Rebbe Barcheni. So this was Rabbi Shua ben Korcha. Rebbe asked him, please bless me. Amarlo, yiratzosh tagia lachatzi amai. You should live to half my life. Chulu lo? What? And what are the guys after you going to do? In other words, you live as long a life as I lived. You're going to accomplish everything. There'll be nothing left for them to do. Avua bar'ihi minyamin bar'ihi, these two brothers. Chanamar teiti li deloi stalki begoy. I get a schar because I never looked at a goy. Chanamar teiti li deloi al vishutfut b'ani goy. And I should get a schar because I never made a partnership with a goy. is the last item. I was never very severe in my own home. I never walked in front of somebody who's greater than me. I didn't think divrei Torah in dirty places. I never walked 4 steps without Torah or tefillin, which means 4 steps in a place where you're allowed to. I didn't sleep in the Beit Midrash even to nap. I never rejoiced at the misfortune of my fellows. I never called my friend by some sort of a nickname, something that is unpleasant. All right, Chanichato is really an unpleasant name, and Chachinato seems to be just any sort of a nickname, even if it's not inherently unpleasant. I always called them by their names. 12, Imir Tz Hashem, tomorrow we will continue, and Imir Tz Hashem on Sunday we will finish Masechet Megillah.